Welcome to The Strategic Marketer, where we talk about strategies, tactics, and practical steps to help you become a better marketer. I'm your host, Joseph Lewin, and today's guest is Chris Roach. Chris is the CEO of Catalyst Consulting, a revenue and pipeline growth-focused marketing agency. Today, we're going to be talking about demand generation, but specifically focused on performance marketing. If you're not familiar with performance marketing, that basically means paid ads, pushing paid media, whether that's paid search or paid social, behind your marketing campaigns. So without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Chris. Yeah, so we've talked about demand generation on this podcast before, but what we're going to focus on today is more on the paid media side of demand generation and some of the things that you can do and how you can measure. But first, let's just level set with what is demand generation.
Yeah, absolutely. So demand generation in itself is a marketing strategy that really targets the entire market of who could be your ICP rather than focusing on a very specific segment of that or those that are necessarily just in buyer mode. So it's a tactic that's used by majority B2B companies. The threshold that I typically recommend of where you can really get results with demand generation is if you have an ACV, so average contract value of $10,000 and up. If you're at a point where you know your average contract value or your annual contract value is above $10,000, demand generation can be a very effective technique used on paid social.
Awesome. And then what's the difference between demand generation and demand capture?
Yeah, so they're basically two facets of the whole demand generation. When we talk about demand capture, that's where we refer to being able to capture the intent of people who are actively searching for a solution who maybe just aren't brand aware. So when you think about any given market, there's approximately between 1% to 2% of any given market who's actively in buyer mode, who's going out and searching for a solution. So demand capture is really just a fancy way of saying Google Ads or Bing Ads for very high intent searches. So financial forecasting software, podcast as a service software, you know, whatever those high intent search terms are. And it's really getting somebody at the point where they're actively trying to find that solution and capturing that demand. Demand generation, that focuses on the whole pie of the remaining 98% of your ICP or who's in market on how you can create content, educate, entertain, inform the entire market over the course of a 3, 6, 9, 12 month period to the point that when they do enter that buying mode and that buying cycle, they are already brand aware, they're solution aware, and that will result then in shorter sales cycles and lower customer acquisition costs.
Okay, so before we get into the paid ad side of things, how is demand generation, like what's the difference between that and maybe some other strategies that people would be familiar with?
Yeah, I mean, the most common strategy that we see with B2B clients who are running at the moment is going to be lead generation. So this is basically where you're running paid social on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, TikTok, you know, even on Google Ads as well, where you're running these lead generation campaigns and basically you're driving traffic to a landing page with the intent that they're then going to download an ebook, a white paper, they're going to sign up for a webinar, they're going to submit their contact information, at which point that contact information enters typically an automated sequence, which is run through Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever CRM platform you're using. And then a sales team or an SDR is going to reach out to that potential prospect and try and take them through this buying journey and this sales process to the point where they then ultimately end up buying the product. The issue that we're seeing with lead generation is, first and foremost, just those that are actually submitting contact information, the conversion rates of submitting contact information to actually close one is going to be less than 0.1%. So we think when we think about the customer acquisition cost, your sales team is spending a significant amount of time targeting people who just simply aren't in buyer mode, who are either in research phase or just simply clicked it because it was an interesting ad and they wanted to learn more about it and they may not even fit your ICP. So lead generation for the past really, 10, 15 years with paid social has been the go-to strategy for B2B marketers. But we're at a point now where when you can make that switch to demand generation, you can significantly reduce those customer acquisition costs and have higher conversion rates, which ultimately leads to not having to have such an overinflated team. The issue that a lot of marketers face who want to make that switch is getting buy-in from leadership to be able to make that change because it's not as easy to track as something like lead generation.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say that lead generation at its core is really more of a sales extension than marketing. Like there are certain marketing activities in there, but it's really more how do we get more people in front of our sales team as fast as we can.
It's just, how can we get contact information of who our sales team can outbound sales to, cold outbound sales to, who can they reach out to? The issue is the conversion rate of even getting hold of those people is going to be very, very small, and let alone them actually remembering downloading the white paper. So it results in a non-buyer-centric process where the buyer is then, not in a position where they're given the information that they need and they're basically sold to prematurely rather than trying to help educate them to the point where they know the value of the product. And it can result in, a lot of opportunities being lost.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and when you think about it, it's really valuable for that 1-2% of people who are in the market at the moment, because they don't have to go do the research. They have somebody that reaches out to them and they go, oh yeah, I am actually trying to solve that problem, or I'm about to. And so you get some positive feedback from the small amount of people that are actually in market. So it's kind of a false positive for the sales team and for leadership when they go, oh, well, we did actually get in front of people. And if we just call, 400 people instead of 300 people, then we're going to get 5 more demos booked a week. And this is great. Mm-hmm. It's going to help this next quarter. The problem is when everybody's doing that, you get diminishing returns. So if your company was the only company doing outreach about this product, just doing outreach in general like that, maybe it's not the end of the world. But when that's the primary way that most B2B companies are going, there's major buyer fatigue when you're getting pounded with sales outreach. And, when you're just trying to do some high level research and figure something out. So you download an ebook and then you get pounded by the sales team for 6 months on a product that you couldn't even buy anyway, or you're not a decision maker for that product, or you're not going to be in market for it for 6 months or 8 months. And somebody's calling you every 1-2 weeks, so that they're hitting their regular cadence. Burnout from the buyer side.
And that's the issue, is that the sales reps have a quota that they need to hit in terms of activities that they've got to perform each week. So when you have, like you say, someone that's 6 months out from making a buying decision, that sales rep has to constantly be reaching out to them to hit their quota, which is then pushing that potential client away from the company and really into the hands of a competitor at that point, because they're not creating a positive buying experience, and it just results in a large inefficiency within the sales department. And you're right, it really is. It's a sales activity. It's lead generation. It's straight sales. It's an extension of the sales department. It's just trying to create opportunities. And the reason it's been done for the last 10, 15 years is the fact that it does result in closed one. No one's questioning the fact that you will get a small percent who are going to ultimately, you're going to find at the right time, who happen to be in buyer mode, who don't know about a competitor's product, who are brand unaware, and they download the ebook because they thought it was interesting, and then they end up, we actually are in buyer mode, we're in research phase, and I'm the person that you should be talking to, and let's have a conversation. And that 0.01%, that's going to work for them. But the other 99.9%, that's the issue. And when you look at the customer acquisition costs across lead generation and you accurately look about it, and this is the interesting thing, is that when people look at customer acquisition costs with lead generation, they just look at, right, this was the cost for getting a lead, this is the percentage that went on to close one. Nobody's factoring in the 15-person sales team that's closed one deal this quarter because of this, and everything else has been inbound, and yet 99% of their activities haven't been revenue influencing. And that's when you actually break that down, it becomes a lot more expensive than people realize. And that's where demand generation can have such a large impact, is being able to dramatically reduce the number of activities and the number of outreach, because you can severely shorten that sales cycle.
Yeah, I mean, because basically you have to include the cost of your sales team, your SDR team, BDRs, whatever you want to call them, AEs, everybody that's having touch points with the customer, you have to include their salary as part of that. And if you're not including that in the cost, then you're going to get a wildly inaccurate, because what happens is, okay, well, we're going to beef up leads, and then you beef up leads. So you're getting leads coming in. So then you have to beef up your sales team. And then if leads are going to drop, now that sales team isn't trained in doing good quality cold outreach where they're doing research. These are typically very inexperienced people, very inexperienced in sales. And that, they're not good copywriters. They don't have a background in writing. So you're basically then at this point where you have to ramp up lead generation to justify the cost of this sales team that you've already invested in and are already there. So it's kind of this vicious cycle of you generate a bunch of leads, you're getting some sales, so then you hire SDRs, and then those SDRs require a certain amount of leads, and they're not going to be doing their own outbound typically. You know, you'll have maybe like a unicorn person who's really great at cold outreach, but they're going to be the exception in that situation, not the rule. So then you have to generate a ton of leads, and then there's diminishing returns, because at a certain point, if you're calling 100 people a day from your SDR team, or you're generating 100 leads a day, you know, and you're hitting these people all the time, at a certain point, you can't do that anymore. You know, you get a big enough team, you get enough leads coming in, and you can't really expand it anymore. So then you have diminishing returns. And so at first you see this huge spike, you know, like if you had your entire marketing and sales team just hit the phones tomorrow, you're going to see a spike in sales this quarter. Mm-hmm. And you might see a spike in sales the next quarter, but then you're going to start to see diminishing returns. And then you have to hire in more people if you want to see that go, you know, keep going. And then every new person you hire, you're going to see a lower percentage in the end of the day across the whole team in closed won deals. And so it's kind of this, this vicious cycle when you're focusing on generating leads. And then the other problem with that is, sometimes you end up alienating people who want to buy, and your sales team actually ends up getting in the way of them making a purchase.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is a lot of companies don't understand how to make that buying journey seamless. So the fact that most buyers don't want to talk to an SDR or talk to even a sales rep, they want to be able to understand the product, watch a demo without having to put in contact information, and even just purchase it, depending on what the, you know, if you're selling something that's $1,500 a month, that doesn't necessarily have to go through an account executive. That can just be a, you know, a purchase that's made, you know, straight on the company credit card that goes straight through the platform. So for a lot of my SaaS companies that I work with, we're looking at how can we streamline that sales process as quickly as possible to make it where people can just go through, because then you don't have to have an overinflated sales team. And this is the issue when you talked about, you know, the marketing leads going to the sales team, you have to beef up the sales team, then you have to beef up the leads. It's this self-fulfilling prophecy of we're just going to, you know, basically continue to do what we do at scale and then not think about how that's going to negatively affect our potential buyers, and also how the cost of this is skyrocketing because of the fact that, you know, like you say, you don't have sales reps that can necessarily go out and prospect on their own. And that unicorn that you mentioned, they're not there in 6 months' time. If they're doing this successfully, they're going to move on to somewhere else that does get this, because they don't want to spend 99% of their time following up with leads that aren't ready to buy. They want to be able to close as much as they can. A lot of SDRs, you know, have strong commission quotas as well, and strong commission incentives. So they want to close as much as they can. And if other companies are doing that, you will see the best sales individuals, they'll shift to companies that have qualified prospects coming in that focus on demand generation and really inbound leads, because they're going to see the ability to make more money at those kind of companies rather than having to, you know, smile and dial, pound the phones just to be able to set a meeting with someone that isn't really qualified to try and force them into a sale.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give an example of this, and I've probably already talked about this on the show before, but my brother's in sales, and he's one of those unicorn people that actually knows how to do cold outreach. And he is usually selling to the government. And so it's these very long sales cycles, and it takes a ton of research up front. And, you know, they're spending tens of hours, if not sometimes hundreds of hours, way before the sale to build relationships with multiple different people in the buying cycle, and educating themselves about projects that are coming up that haven't even, you know, gone out to bid yet, and understanding what's going to happen with that. So it's very complex what they're doing to really be able to reach out to people and see that come through. And there is really true value in that. But he uses Salesforce, and he loves Salesforce. He's built out a pretty robust Salesforce instance for his team. And the Salesforce team has become horrible. I mean, they basically have this exact model that we're talking about, where they have this whole team of SDRs, or, you know, whatever they want to call them. I think they might call them AEs, but he's like, every 3 months I get a new rep who knows nothing about me, nothing about my account. Then they email me and they go, "Hey, just wanted to let you know the end of the quarter is coming up, so I get a ton of discounts." And it's like, I don't care about your quota. Like, well, I'm a salesperson. I know the game. Like, you're reaching out to me as a salesperson who's buying Salesforce from you, and you're telling me that your quota is coming up and that that's a big deal. It's not a big deal to me as the buyer. And he's like, all they have to do is go, hey, we just launched these new features. I was looking at your account and saw that you're, you know, focusing on these things. I think this new feature would be beneficial. Would you be open to scheduling a time where we can talk about it? And he said he probably would have bought more from them at this point because there are some features that he's interested in. But instead of answering those questions, they're just like throwing out this template that was created and running with it. And it's really given him a bad taste in his mouth for Salesforce. And he's buying Salesforce in spite of that team, not because of them.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, you see that more and more across the board. And again, I don't want to just get into a situation where we're just ripping on sales teams at the moment, because I've done sales myself. I was a chief revenue officer before starting Catalyst and ran a sales team. So I've been in those situations where the training that has to go into your sales reps to the point where they can sell in a consultative way, where, you know, similar to what you're saying with your brother, you find out what the issue is, you find out how your product or service can be a solution, where that pain point is. The same way as a doctor, you diagnose an issue, you understand the situation that your client is in, you help understand how your products can make their life easier. And that's really what it is. How can you save that person time or save them money? Those are the two factors that, in my experience, people are going to buy from. It's a headache that I don't want to deal with, and I can have you take care of it. Or it's something that I have no idea how to do. And I sold software development, so a lot of the clients I was working with, they couldn't build a product. They knew that. So for me, it was, how can we put you in a situation where your end goal is to have this product come out? Mm. So my line of thinking with that is, how can we be in a position where we can help you launch this product in a cost-effective manner in the shortest time period, where you can then work with us over, you know, 6, 12, 18 months as we build out this platform and then add additional features on with it? That was always my goal with software development. So same with your brother in that situation of, once you have them in the door, what other features can make your life easier, and how can I explain that to you in a way that's going to allow you to understand them and then want to work more and more with us? But when you're trying to, you know, if you're saying, hey, I have a quota and I need to hit it, if someone says that to me, I'm just, you know, get out of here. I've no interest in that. I don't care what your quota is. I got my own issues to deal with. You know, as a sales rep, you're not my concern. You don't work for me. You know, you're not part of my family, and therefore you're just not my concern as to what your quota is. So it's putting yourself in the shoes of the buyer. And that again leans back into marketing of, if you're a buyer, how do you want to buy? If I want to buy something, I want to be able to go out and I want to research what I'm looking for. I want to be able to find solutions that fit that. I want to be able to watch a demo. I want to be able to understand how that particular software, for instance, has helped companies similar to me, what results it's been able to achieve for that company. And then I want to talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about. The last thing I want to do is as a buyer that's looking to buy software that's, you know, $15,000 a year, is have a conversation with an SDR that's been there for 3 weeks and has no idea what they're doing and can't talk the lingo with me. And everything that I'm saying is completely over their head. That's the quickest way for me to say, yeah, I'm going to go with somebody else, and this is just not worth it. And that's where, you know, for me, HubSpot is a company I've been with for ages. And there's a sales rep from my first ever company who I still communicate with on a regular basis. And I will always stay with HubSpot because of him. And I love working with HubSpot now. And now I implement that with all of my clients. And he was one of the best consultative sales leaders that I've worked with. And that, you know, I always think back when I'm doing sales training or working with companies now, like, it's always his example that I use. But it puts you in a situation where you like working with the company because you like the individuals you work with.
Yeah. And I've had several salespeople on the podcast specifically for the reason that sales is valuable. And as a marketing person, I understand the importance of sales. And, you know, I mean, in B2B, in the end of the day, you have to have a sales rep. Now, whether you want to call them that or not, and where they fit in, and how early they should come in, those are all important questions to ask. But at the end of the day, having somebody on the other end that knows what they're talking about, that can understand the customer problems and show them how they're going to save time, money, you know, or get better results by working with you. You have to have that, because marketing, our job is basically to figure out what are the overarching challenges that prospects are facing or that the market's facing, and how do we generalize those and, like, take, we basically have to be as specific as we possibly can, but then generalize those specifics across, you know, a much wider range of people, so that we're speaking directly to a very large group of people. But what a sales rep can do is then they can work off of that to go to the specific issue that that person's facing and speaks to their specific pain points and problems. And you can get sort of close to that as a marketing person, and you need to understand your customer and, you know, write directly to them and all of those things. But at a certain point, every individual customer does have an individual situation, and a sales rep that's able to ask great questions and understand the unique challenges that the customer is facing and walk them through that, that's invaluable.
Yeah. And I would say as a marketer, it's about addressing the top five biggest issues that your potential customer could have. And it's about being able to clearly convey that through messaging, that the, you know, five most overarching issues that you're currently facing, putting yourselves in those, in their shoes, how that product or service can benefit them. But then when you get to the sales rep, then it's about the individual nuances. And not every client that comes through the door is going to have a completely unique set of problems that they're facing that your service or your products could solve, but they want to feel like they do. And that's the difference. Is as a sales rep, you have to understand what their problems are to be able to diagnose that and really show how your, you know, software can benefit that, knowing that, you know, the big five, they've already been covered. We've already talked about how it can save you time, how it's going to save you money, expected results that we can see through marketing. So higher level, absolutely, that's where marketing can come in. But as a sales rep, you've got to dive deep and you've got to really help understand the pain point and also what's the trigger that's going to allow them to say, yes, this is worth it. And that's, again, this is a product that's worth it for me to invest $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year into as a company for this reason. And once you find that killer feature, and once you diagnose that to a point where you have it, that's when as a sales rep, you're going to continue to, you know, have a successful close rate with that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it takes a lot of practice and training to get somebody to that point. And so, you know, again, kind of coming around full circle, to just have an ebook on a, you know, really wide topic and then have a salesperson call after that and follow up with something that's, you know, not necessarily even pinpointed to the content that that person just consumed. That's really hard. And there's tons of burnout in that world, because when you cold call people that aren't interested day after day after day, it starts to become a real challenge. So we talked a lot about demand generation, what it is, lead generation, some of the challenges there, and the value of focusing on, you know, really relationships up front and building relationships with people who are in the buying cycle ahead of time, so that when they're ready to buy, you're the preferred option or you're the favorite option, the one that people want to work with. So then how does demand generation affect your paid ads or paid media strategies?
Yeah, demand generation as itself a paid advertising is a mindset as much as it is a technique and a strategy that can be used. And the reason I say it's a mindset is you have to be willing to adjust the metrics and the KPIs that you're looking for as a marketing leader, or you're relaying back to your, you know, CEO or your leadership team, to the point where you can measure success. So that North Star has to move from, if it's right now, cost per lead, cost per click, click-through rate, whatever these vanity metrics are, we have to look at how we can shift the mindset and help educate your internal team. So if you're the internal champion for demand generation, how can you help educate your internal team that this isn't working and these are the metrics that we should be optimized for? So the first step that I recommend any marketer that's looking to change from lead gen to demand gen, first of all, review historical data. Look at actually what the conversion rates are. You know, I'm going to throw out 0.01%, and this is something that I use as a general rule of thumb. See what it's like for your company just on the cost per lead to actually convert to close one over the last 12 months. See how that is, and then look at the total marketing spend that you have and how much you can directly attribute back to that channel. If you've been running LinkedIn, you know, lead generation for a white paper download, and you've spent $50,000 in the last 12 months on that, $100,000 in the last 12 months, whatever that, you know, budget is, how many closed won opportunities has that actually resulted in? How many of those have you won, and what are those conversion rates? Once you have that data, it's a lot easier to have a benchmark to be able to basically assess and compare demand generation to lead generation, because you have the metrics of what's been done already. When we talk about the metrics that you now want to focus for with demand generation, it's about looking for content to be consumed rather than necessarily a lead come in. So where we talk about these white paper downloads, The best way that I look at this is if you run a LinkedIn ad and you have a click-through rate, let's say it's 3%. Let's say you have a really good ad and you have a click-through rate of 3%, which for non-marketers is pretty high. Most of them, it's like 1% to 2%. So let's go with 3%. 97% of people that see your ad haven't clicked to the landing page. So when you talk about just that massive number right there, now let's say your landing page has a conversion rate, let's go 10%, which again is very high for a conversion rate on a landing page. Now we're talking about 0.3% of those people who are actually going to download the ebook. Then let's say 1 in 3 are going to read the ebook. Now we're talking about, again, back to that 0.1% basically of who is going to be able to consume that content. When you focus for content being consumed in the newsfeed and we repurpose the same content into videos, into carousels, into podcasts like this, where you talk about the purpose and the point of what you have, the issue isn't always that the content in the ebook is bad. Quite often, companies have great content. It's just not consumed in what feels like an organic and natural way by your potential buyer. So when you look specifically on platforms like LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok, when we're producing content to be consumed, let's look at how we can repurpose that into videos and then measure the success of those campaigns in terms of what's the percentage being consumed of the video. Are people that are in your ICP actually engaging with the content? Can you see people liking, sharing, commenting on, getting some kind of reaction from who would be an ideal customer for you? And over time, you will see how those individuals are consuming your content. And over a longer period of time, you will be able to educate them on what the benefits are, to the point where you'll start to see organic search increase. You'll start to see direct traffic increase. You'll start to see the cost per opportunity decrease. And when somebody does come in, they'll be citing that they saw that podcast episode, that they saw that carousel on LinkedIn, they watched that Facebook video. They'll start to cite that back. And that's how it's very easy to attribute that back to those campaigns. And over a longer time period, if you're a marketer that can explain this in a detailed way, you'll be able to justify how with a smaller budget, you can achieve greater results than what you currently have with lead gen.
Yeah. I mean, and I would say that that's another huge factor is the length of the sales cycle. And so like with lead generation, how many touch points do you have to have with a prospect before it's going to close? And how many months or years is that process going to take? Mm-hmm. And if you're able to cut your sales cycle in half, that's a significant, there's a significant difference in how fast you're going to be able to bring money in, but also if your sales team is spending half the amount of time on calls. And that's another piece of demand generation, is helping people understand what you do up front and not having your salesperson wasting time when somebody's nowhere near ready to buy. Because, I mean, it's really time consuming to be spending doing all this outreach to somebody who's not yet there, even if they will be in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And basically just through educating your prospects up front so that they really understand what they're going through. And I think, in the end of the day, it's thinking through, like, when you're in the buying cycle, what's important to you? What do you want to know? What do you want to understand? And at what point do you want to talk to a salesperson? And I mean, to be fair, I do want to talk to a salesperson at a certain point. Once I'm educated to a point and I have a very specific question that can't be answered on the website, that's when I want to talk to a salesperson. But then what ends up happening a lot of times is you get on with the salesperson and they have their deck that they want to go through. And they have all of these things that they want to do to try to inflate the value of their product. And if I don't already understand those things up front, they've already lost. And then I'm sitting there for an hour or more just to get my one question answered. And half the time they don't even answer that on that call. They're like, okay, well, we'll get a more technical person on later, but first we have to go through all these other pieces and, blah, blah, blah. Whereas if every time somebody's logging on to LinkedIn, every couple times, depending on what your ad budget is and how big the market is, they're seeing you come up in their feed, talking and answering these questions that they have. By the time they actually get on with a salesperson, you don't have to go through all of those steps. You're able to skip 2, 3, 4 steps in your sales cycle because they're already ready. They're already bought into the idea before. And your sales team spending less time trying to convince people and more time just warming up the relationships and like getting obstacles out of their way, which is a totally different experience than having to like coerce people or make them feel like they have to take action, you know, the always be closing idea. Like, you can get rid of that altogether if you've been warming people up through these educational pieces of content in their feed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I find it ironic because of my past of being in sales so heavily now, I'm almost a reformed sales leader at this point, because I'm now, you know, so much more focused on demand generation than I am with sales. And it's because of the fact that as a sales leader, I don't want to deal with unqualified prospects. And if you're a sales team, I don't want to deal with people that aren't ready to buy and have to follow up and chase for 9 months. You know, you're always in a situation where you're going to fail with that. So if you can increase the qualification of the opportunities that are going to come through, yes, the opportunities, they will decrease, but the conversion rate is going to increase. So when you talk about the total number of customers, it will increase. You're just not having 1,000 leads come in per month or per week, or again, you know, depending on the frequency, depending on what your budget is. So your sales team isn't having to follow up with a lot of people that are unqualified. Now, the biggest question I get here is, you know, and I actually have this with a current potential client that I'm working with or hopefully working with, is I've got a 10-person sales team. What the hell do you want me to do with them? If they're not got leads coming in, you know, what are they supposed to do? You know, I have this overinflated team. I have this huge overhead. What should I be doing with my sales team? I don't want to just let sales guys go and fire them because, you know, we switch and we test this out. And this is where it goes into the personal branding of creating your own demand generation. And the argument that I make with any CEO that asks this question is, it's a better use of your sales guys' time for them to spend that remaining now 50% of free time that they have on prospecting on LinkedIn, on creating content and connecting with individuals who are in the ICP, in building relationships, in starting a podcast, in going on TikTok and experimenting with things like this, and creating this personal brand. And the reason I can say this with such confidence is, for Catalyst, I've never spent a dollar on paid advertisement, and we have clients every single month that come in because of the time that I've invested into my personal brand. And yeah, I'm seeing that compound effect now. And it honestly, it took, I would say, 6 months to where the point where the engine was constantly bringing in what I needed to scale at the path that I wanted to. The first couple of months, it was, you know, here and there, slow drips coming through. Now we're at a point where we can pick which clients we want to work with, because every single month, new potential clients are coming through because of the content that I'm producing as a sales leader. Now imagine, yeah, if there's nine others of me doing this. This is where it gets interesting. So as a CEO with an overinflated sales team, if you're understanding the value of this and you want to make the change, but in the back of your head you're thinking, I don't want to have layoffs, I don't want to be able to just, you know, shrink that sales team, there are a lot of options for them to do which are going to result in a far greater ROI than just pounding the phones and making 100 phone calls a day and connecting with one person who doesn't remember downloading the ebook anyway and is eating lunch and not in a position to talk. There are a lot more revenue influencing activities which will result in a much higher ROI and allow you to still justify that sales team and basically create demand at scale, not only through the company but also through the individuals and that personal branding as well.
Yeah, and I want to get into before we run out of time about measuring and what that looks like and how people could do that. But one more thought on this area is I would say that revenue is a lagging indicator, and even a focus on revenue altogether, which I know, you know, that's in the end of the day how we're going to justify to most people and most companies is by talking about revenue, and I understand that. But relationships are what you need to build a long-term brand. You know, if you're looking to close sales next quarter, then hit the phones. You know, if you need sales tomorrow or you're going to go out of business, you kind of have to hit the phones to a degree. But if you're looking at sales in after 90 days, then you need to be building relationships with people. And if you're looking at sales growth over a year or two, relationships are going to trump cold, you know, these cold calls or outbound focused on people who are ready to buy. And I would even take it a step further back and say, we focus way too much on prospects. Mm-hmm. Because they're not the only person that's going to influence the buying decision. They're being influenced by many, many other people who are never going to be a prospect of yours. And if you only focus on lead generation, you're only focusing on building a transactional relationship with the person who's actually going to buy from you. But the people who are influencing that person, they might be a friend that is in a totally different space. But if they have heard something about a software that could help their friend, they'll give them a call. And that recommendation from a friend that's not even in the same space is going to have more weight than your ebook will.
Oh, yeah.
Period. And then if it's a friend that's in the same industry, but they're not in the buying cycle right now, and they make a recommendation, that's also going to go way further than your ebook. Or if it's a leader, you know, a sales leader at a company, and they're talking to their marketing team, and they're saying, "Hey, I saw this ad, or whatever. I saw this podcast clip, and I learned about this product that might be worth looking into." Again, that's going to have way more influence on their buying decision, even though it's not the prospect themselves. They're not the buyer. It's somebody who influences the buyer. And then there's industry influencers who are, again, they might not work for the same type of company that you're selling to, but they have influence with that buyer. And those people are just as important to influence as the prospect. And if you're able to take a step back and realize that having industry influence and industry relationships is going to bring in way more revenue over the course of, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years, you know, that's to me where marketing and sales efforts should really be spent, is building those deep relationships in the industry across the board.
And also, just to kind of jump on the back of that as well, as a marketer, when you do make that switch and you're working with your sales team, one of the easiest ways to get the buy-in quickly and to show that it's working effectively once you do start to get these opportunities come in is to have just simply a Slack channel where every single opportunity, every single request for information, and you're asking for that self-report attribution, have that in there for the entire company to see. Because as a sales leader, or as even as an SDR, if I'm creating content and somebody cites my video on TikTok as a reason why they came in through the door, that for me is a huge ego boost and a huge really justification and kind of affirmation of, hey, this is working. Like, this is great. Like, now I'm going to double down and create more content. And, you know, I was at a Brewer game 2 weeks ago where a friend of mine who I've not seen for 5 years, probably since, you know, since even after college, comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, we just let go of our head of marketing. I'm going to introduce you to one of our sales leader, and we're looking at hiring, you know, someone to do demand generation right now." And the only reason that he even knows that I'm doing this, we've not spoke for 5-6 years, is because we're connected on LinkedIn, because of the content that I'm producing. And again, it just shows how you don't always know how it's going to necessarily play out. It's very difficult to track. It's very difficult to understand when it's going to really have that compound effect. But when you do experience it, it's a huge boost and confirmation of how this is working. So as a sales individual, if you can get the buy-in, show them that it's working as soon as possible.
Yeah, so this last part we'll have to run through a little bit quickly here, but I want to hit on it. And it's just, your lead in right there was perfect. So say that you're working for a company that is very lead generation focused as a marketer, and you want to start making this change and you see the value of it. What are some practical steps that they can take both to correctly measure and communicate using data the reasons for, you know, switching to demand generation?
Yeah, from the data standpoint, again, look at the historical, get the baseline, figure out what's been going on so far. In terms of being able to actually implement this as a tactic, it doesn't have to be cold turkey. You don't have to suddenly say, right, we're going to turn off all leads. What you can start to do is continue with your demand capture channels. That's part of demand generation. If you have Google Ads, it's been effective. If you have people where you're running LinkedIn ads to schedule a demo or schedule a request for contact information, continue to have them run if they're resulting in qualified opportunities. But it more at the top of the funnel, these ebooks, these white papers, these, you know, webinars, look at repurposing that in a way that's basically ungated. And a lot of companies are a little bit hesitant to do this. I would take it one step extra and say, get it to a way where it can just be consumed organically and natively within the newsfeed, because that's where you're going to see the lowest cost per consumption and the lowest way to educate at a high frequency. Look at doing that and focus on the consumption metrics. Are people watching the videos? What's the percentage of the videos that they're watching? Are people clicking through the carousels? And even the frequency of how often you're hitting that very specific and targeted ICP. Over the course of 3 months, you will see an increase in organic search. You will see an increase in direct traffic coming in. Once you have the self-reported attribution, which is a hot topic in kind of demand generation right now as well. If you create that form that says, how did you hear about us? Have free entry, allow people to type in what they're thinking and how they found the company, circle that back then to that sales team. These are ways that you'll show the opportunities that they're going to come in. And then over more of a 6 to 12 month period, you can show that conversion rates, the customer acquisition costs, how that conversion rate has increased, and you'll be able to justify increasing the budget to hit more of your market at scale to produce more content once you can justify that you have that ROI. And again, you know, I know you've mentioned that, you know, the return is the North Star with this, but it's not going to happen overnight. And that's where I think a lot of marketers trip themselves up, is to say, hey, we're going to do this and we're going to lower customer acquisition costs. And the fact is, a lot of companies right now are hesitant to make that shift to demand generation, especially with what's going on with valuations, with potential recession coming on right now and entering that recession. A lot of companies are a little bit nervous to make that change. However, if you make that change now, it's in 12 to 18 months that you're going to see the benefit, not in 3 months' time. And like you mentioned, if you want sales next month, pick up the phones. It's the best way to do it. Nobody's questioning that. But if you want to increase pipeline, increase sales dramatically over a 12 to 24 month period, that's where making that switch to demand gen is going to be really, really effective. And I would argue now is the best time, because, you know, we talked before the show, my clients are seeing a 30% reduction in CPMs right now because a lot of companies are scared. And while companies are scared, they're going to stop their marketing spend and they're going to say, hey, as sales leaders, go and close deals, but they don't have the opportunities to close. And a lot of buyers, if we continue on with this, they're not going to go and continue to buy. So it's about educating for further down the line.
Yeah. And like you mentioned before, if your sales team is investing in building a personal brand and they're spending their efforts on building relationships with people in the space over just dead end follow-up with people who are never going to buy from you. In the long run, that's really going to be where you pay off. And the interesting thing is, the episode before this one, talked with Cody West, and they they've been doing a lot of demand generation for a long time, but they were very focused on attribution software and they still use it. But he really goes into detail about how they started doing self-reported attribution, and that they went from a single line just saying, how'd you hear about us, to then putting extra text in there that said, how'd you hear about us, and please explain in as much detail as possible. And they got way more information. And then they extended the text box to look like, you know, instead of a single line, it was multi-line, and it increased it again significantly. And, you know, he talks about those results, and it's really, really pretty interesting. But yeah, Chris, thanks so much for coming on the show. How can people hear more about you?
Yeah, best place to learn more about me is going to be LinkedIn. So just Chris Roach on LinkedIn. I'm sure there'll be a link on the podcast as well. And then if you're interested in learning more about Catalyst and the work that we're doing, or potentially becoming a client, head over to catalystconsulting.services.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thanks again for coming on.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to The Strategic Marketer wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you could do me a personal favor and hit 5 stars on the rating, you don't have to leave a full review, just hit 5 stars. It would really help me out. I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The Strategic Marketer.